We are in Genesis chapter 29. Genesis chapter 29. You remember that Jacob was tricked into marrying someone that he did not love. He worked 7 years for his father-in-law in order to be able to marry the one that he loved. But they didn't have a part of the wedding ceremony where you lift the veil and kiss the bride at the end of the ceremony. They just went into the darkness of the tent with the veil still down, and he spent the night with his intended bride's sister, which was her father's trickery, deceit. And he wakes up the next morning after his honeymoon night, which he's waited for 7 years. And lo and behold, it's the wrong woman in bed. This is horrifying. So he goes back, complains, says, "I can't believe you would deceive me," which is kind of comical since the reason he's there is because he had to flee from his brother because he had deceived his father into stealing his brother's blessing. Or I should say, he deceived his father and thereby stolen his father's blessing. It would have been his brother's. He's a deceiver, but he doesn't like being deceived. So he gets to marry the one he loves also. And we pick up the story in verse 31 of Genesis 29. "When the Lord saw that Leah was not loved, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. Leah became pregnant and gave birth to a son. She named him Reuben, for she said, 'It is because the Lord has seen my misery. Surely my husband will love me now.' She conceived again, and when she gave birth to a son, she said, 'Because the Lord heard that I am not loved, he gave me this one too.' So she named him Simeon. Again she conceived. And when she gave birth to a son, she said, 'Now at last my husband will become attached to me, because I have borne him 3 sons. So he was named Levi. She conceived again, and when she gave birth to a son, she said, 'This time I will praise the Lord.' So she named him Judah. Then she stopped having children. When Rachel saw that she was not bearing Jacob any children, she became jealous of her sister. So she said to Jacob, 'Give me children or I'll die.' Jacob became angry with her and said, 'Am I in the place of God who has kept you from having children?' Then she said, 'Here is Bilhah, my maidservant. Sleep with her so that she can bear children for me and that through her I too can build a family.' So she gave him her servant Bilhah as a wife. Jacob slept with her, and she became pregnant and bore him a son. Then Rachel said, 'God has vindicated me. He has listened to my plea and given me a son.' Because of this, she named him Dan. Rachel's servant Bilhah conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. Then Rachel said, 'I have had a great struggle with my sister, and I have won.' So she named him Naphtali. When Leah saw that she had stopped having children, she took her maidservant Zilpah and gave her to Jacob as a wife. Leah's servant Zilpah bore Jacob a son. Then Leah said, 'What good fortune!' So she named him Gad. Leah's servant Zilpah bore Jacob a second son. Then Leah said, 'How happy I am! The women will call me happy.' So she named him Asher. During wheat harvest, Reuben went out into the fields and found some mandrake plants, which he brought to his mother Leah. Rachel said to Leah, 'Please give me some of your son's mandrakes.' But she said to her, 'Wasn't it enough that you took away my husband? Will you take my son's mandrakes too?' 'Very well,' Rachel said. 'He can sleep with you tonight in return for your son's mandrakes.' So when Jacob came in from the fields that evening, Leah went out to meet him. 'You must sleep with me,' she said. 'I have hired you with my son's mandrakes.' So he slept with her that night. God listened to Leah, and she became pregnant and bore Jacob a fifth son. Then Leah said, God has rewarded me for giving my maidservant to my husband. So she named him Issachar. Leah conceived again and bore Jacob a sixth son. Then Leah said, God has presented me with a precious gift. This time my husband will treat me with honor, because I have borne him six sons. So she named him Zebulun. Sometime later she gave birth to a daughter and named her Dinah. Then God remembered Rachel. He listened to her and opened her womb. She became pregnant and gave birth to a son and said, God has taken away my disgrace. She named him Joseph and said, may the Lord add to me another son. May God add his blessing to this reading from his holy and inspired word. What a great family, huh? What a model. This is the way it's supposed to be. That's why we go to the Bible, is to see how things really should be. We know that all around us in our culture there's dysfunction, families falling apart, strife within families, people who have bogus ideas about life and family and all that sort of thing. So we go to the Bible to see how it's supposed to be. And what do we find? We find dysfunctional families with all kinds of strife and problems, because these people, like us, are by nature sinners. And so God in his word shows us the standard of how things should be. And God said, it is not good for the man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him. And he brought the woman to the man. And the man said, this is now bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, for she was taken out of man. For this cause a man shall leave his father and mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let man not separate. That's the pattern. But what we also see in the Word is that over and over, person after person, from generation to generation, fails to live in accordance with God's plan. We are, from generation to generation, experiencing the consequences of not doing things God's way. But we not only see God's plan and man's failure to follow God's plan, we also see God working through man's failures to bring about salvation. This is absolutely amazing and absolutely vital for us to understand. When the Lord saw that Leah was not loved, he opened her womb. Do you see the compassion there? Now, it's not okay to lie. It's not okay to deceive. What Laban did was wrong. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. It was wrong. Shouldn't have done it. But God, in mercy, had compassion on all the parties involved. Because even though Leah was a party to the deception, just like Jacob had been deceiving his father at his mother's request, she deceived Jacob and married him, even though she knew that was not the plan. That was not what Jacob had in mind. She surely didn't miss the fact for 7 years he'd been working in order to marry Rachel because he loved her so much. I mean, she may have been weak of eyes, but she wasn't totally crazy in the head. And yet she went along with this deception and then feels entitled to his love. She's tricked him into marrying her But he's supposed to love her. Guess what? God had compassion on her. She's in a loveless marriage, and God has compassion on her and opens her womb so that she's able to conceive. Children are a gift from the Lord. Say that with me. Children are a gift from the Lord. That's what God says. And so we should never take children for granted. We should recognize that every child is an amazing gift, a blessing. No matter the circumstances, no matter the child's health, even if they have weak eyes like Leah, each one is a precious gift, a precious gift. So the Lord opened her womb and she conceived, and she named him Reuben, for she says, it is because the Lord has seen what? My misery. Surely my husband will love me now. My misery. She's married, but she's miserable. There are a lot of people who are not happily married. They're married. They're not happily married. I've got a friend who's been unhappily single for a long time. I'll be glad to share his name afterwards. But I'm just kidding. I'm not going to share his name. In any case, he has often longed to be married, but he's about my age. And in recent emails over the last few years, he says, the longer I live, the better my life looks. He says, I get around other people. I hear their stories. I see what they're going through, and I think, thank you, God, that I'm not married. Because there are a lot of people who are married and miserable. Such was the case with Leah. And she says, the Lord has seen my misery, and he's done what I knew it would take in order to win my husband. He's given me a son. But it didn't work, did it? The Lord gave her another son. And she said, surely now. But it didn't work. And another. And another. And it never did work. What she wanted was not her children. Her children were a means to an end. What she wanted was the love of her husband, which she didn't get. Let me tell you something. If you think you can fix your marriage by having kids, you don't know much about marriage, and you don't know much about kids. Okay? Children do not fix a relationship. And by the way, children, it's not your job to fix mom and dad's relationship. Do you hear me? It is not your job to fix mom and dad's relationship. Tragically, a lot of kids carry that burden because they see that mom and dad aren't getting along and they think, I've got to fix this. I've got to do something to make it so that mom and dad are happy. That's not your job. Your job is to trust in God and do what he says. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. But don't take responsibility that God hasn't given you. You can't fix mom and dad. You can't fix their marriage. You can't fix their sanity. You can't fix their addictions. You can't fix mom and dad. But you can model for mom and dad what a life surrendered to the Lord looks like. That you can do. And that will honor your father and your mother. Because people will look at you and say, wow, you must have had great parents. You'll bring honor to your father and mother by living a life of obedience to God. Now, God had compassion on her. He opened her womb and she began having children. And every one of these names has meaning and significance. In our culture today, sadly, we generally don't realize that names have meaning. And that biblically speaking, what you call your child has import. It has effect. It has power. And so if you just, you know, I think, well, I'll just call him Buzz. That's a Bible name. Well, that is a Bible name. it's not, as far as I know, one of the more significant terms of blessing which you can name your child. Milcah had two sons, Uz and Buzz. I think that sounds like it. We're having twins and name Uz and Buzz. I don't know, Buzz, he'll probably have an easier time on the playground than Uz. Uz is not as common a name down here. But Buzz, hey, everybody knows Buzz, Buzz Lightyear, you know, I mean, Buzz is a good name. It's a Bible name. There we go. They named their children names that had meaning. So that when that child heard his name, went somewhere, it was a testimony to what God had done. Well, the end of chapter 29, Leah stopped having children. When Rachel saw that she was not bearing Jacob any children, she became jealous of her sister. You remember, up to that point, apparently, she had not really been all that jealous, because she was the good-looking one, and she was the one that her husband really loved. And she knew it. But she's not able to have a child. And she's trying to have a child. And her sister keeps having children. And she becomes jealous of her sister. Not because Jacob started loving the sister more than he loved her. But she just saw that the sister had something she didn't have. And that the sister was able to do something she wasn't able to do. And when we see that in other people sometimes, no matter how many blessings we've got and how much of what we have that person may want, but we just see they've got something we don't have, and we become jealous. That's sin. That is evil. But that's what she did. And she complained to her husband, "Give me children or I'll die." And he became angry. He became angry. Here she had her husband's love, but it wasn't enough. She wanted what her sister had too. And so she blames her husband. Now, does this make sense? Okay? Clearly, he's not the problem. I mean, he's having children with the sister, so what does she think? He's somehow holding back? "Give me children or I'll die," she says. And he became angry and said, "Am I in the place of God? What are you talking about, woman? Why would you try and put pressure on me when it's not me? Am I in the place of God who has kept you from having children?" Did you hear that? They understood something that a lot of people nowadays don't understand. And that is that ultimately, God is in control. And when we have children, they're a gift from God. And when we can't have children, it's because God has another plan. And if anybody should have understood about God's ability to close wombs and open wombs, it would be somebody who was descended from Abraham and Isaac, like, for instance, Jacob. Okay? Then she said, this is Rachel, "Here is Bilhah, my maidservant. Sleep with her so that she can bear children for me, and that through her I too can build a family." So she gave him her servant Bilhah as a wife, and Jacob slept with her, and she became pregnant and bore him a son. And then Rachel said, "God has vindicated me. God has vindicated me. He has listened to my plea and given me a son," and because of this, she named him Dan. Do you think God was sovereignly working out his plan? Or that he was just vindicating her? It's not a good plan that the ladies had, and this was not the first generation to do it, to say, "I'm having trouble having children here, I'm going to give you a surrogate, and you can use her sexually in order to do what I want, and that is produce children for me." Because my attitude toward my children is not that they are gifts from God. My attitude toward my children is that I own them and they reflect on me. Let me tell you, we still see that attitude prevalent in our society today, where children are something that we will get by whatever means necessary in order to fulfill our wishes.
Well, you know, I was never really able to do as much in high school sports as I believe I had the potential to do, because I was having to work outside. My family had some financial pressures, and I was trying to help them. And so as a result, I was not able to devote myself to my team. But my son, I guarantee you, when he gets in high school, he's going to be the star, because he's just like Chip off the old block. I mean, he is like me. I'm telling you, we're going to get him out there. I'm going to get him a trainer, and we're going to get him, and he's going to be the star.
No pressure, son. Okay? You see these women who wanted to be beauty queens now pushing their children to wear the clothes that little children shouldn't be in, and be little princess beauty queens doing little routines, impersonating Dolly Parton and whoever else, Whitney Houston, I guess, and singing, "I will always love you." And a bunch of perverts are sitting in the audience going, "Oh, yes, I want that one." I'm just telling you, we've got parents whose attitude toward their kids is just like this. And that is, I want this for what it's going to do for me. And if it means that I have to give my husband somebody else to have sex with, that's what we'll do, because what I want, I have to have. That's a sick attitude. That is a sick attitude. But it's typical of the human condition. And it's been around throughout human history. And so we don't just see it in our culture today. We see it right here in Genesis chapter 30. Well, the story continues. The maidservants both get in on the act. And so now Jacob is having sex with four women. And the only argument is who gets him tonight. Now, some of you guys are thinking, it's in the Bible, huh? Doesn't sound too bad. The women fighting over me. I'm just Mr. Stud. Hello, ladies. Who wants me tonight? Sounds like a good deal. It is not a good deal. You know, when I was 13 years old, I thought that would be a good deal. I really did. I was 13 years old, and I had realized that I was far too much man for any one woman. And so I prayed. I did. This is a true story. I said to God when I was 13, I said, look, in the Old Testament they had multiple wives. Samson went from place to place and woman to woman. Why can't we do that today? And it was the first time I can recall God ever answering me. Okay, I'd prayed for many things and I'd asked God a lot of questions. But this is the first time it wasn't audible. It wasn't I heard it with this ear. I heard it inside. God said, if that's what would have made you happy, that's the way I would have planned it. I thought, whoa. I remember where I was standing. I was on my parents' carport in Montreat, North Carolina. And it was just like, boom, that hit me. And I was like, oh, okay. Do you know what? God could have designed it any way he wanted. God could have made it so there's five women for every man. God could have made it so that there's five men for every woman. God could have made it so that the way that we reproduce and have children is by bumping elbows six times in rapid succession. He could have. God could have made it so that in order to reproduce, we get earwax and mix it with our spouses in a petri dish. And if God had set it up that way, children everywhere would learn about that at a certain age and say, gross, my parents would never do that. Well, I mean, God could have designed it any way he wanted. You understand? But God designed it the way he did because it's the best way. And his plan is one man and one woman till death do us part. That's the plan. And so what we see here is an accurate picture of the way people behave, but it is not the way it's supposed to be. And yet God is working in this to bring about salvation. The tribe of Levi, the tribe of Judah, they didn't come through Rachel. And yet God would choose the tribe of Levi to be his priests. And God would choose the tribe of Judah as the tribe through whom he would give us the Messiah. God is able to draw a straight line with a crooked stick. Thanks be to God. The most evil injustice in human history was the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. And through that, the behavior of wicked men, God brought us salvation. Thanks be to God. Thanks be to God. So does this mean that our sin isn't sinful? Or that our bad choices don't matter? No, what it means is that God is bigger than our bad choices. It means that God is sovereignly working out his plan even as people are trying to say no to God's plan. God is still at work, working all things together for the good of those who love him, who are the called according to his purpose. I just can't understand how that happens. Well, perhaps that's because you have a finite mind like me. I don't understand how it all works, but I do know this. God does. And you see, I don't have to have it all figured out in order to be able to explain it to God so God will know what to do. God's doing just fine. He's working out his plan, and let me tell you, he is in control. And he's the one who opens and closes wombs. And he's the one who answers prayer from people who don't know how to pray. God has vindicated me. Well, we can't just overlook the mandrake story. During wheat harvest, Reuben went out in the fields and found some mandrake plants, which he brought to his mother Leah. A lot of people thought that mandrake plants were not only an aphrodisiac, but that they were good for fertility. And so, you know, if you had mandrake plants, there was a better chance that you were going to have an amorous evening with your spouse and that children would result, which was the goal. Nowadays, people want to have relations and not produce children in our perverted culture. But in biblical culture, you hoped you were going to have children. That wasn't the only time you had relations, but you hoped you were going to have children. And so mandrake plants were like gold. I mean, this was really cool. Rachel said to Leah, "Please give me some of your son's mandrakes." But she said to her, Leah said, "Wasn't it enough that you took away my husband?" Excuse me, hold on. Back up the tape. Leah, who deceitfully married Rachel's husband on what was supposed to be Rachel's wedding night, Leah says, "You took my husband." Isn't it strange how we can rewrite history in order to suit our emotions? I mean, it wasn't like Leah wasn't there. She knew what had happened, but she felt entitled to that which she had gained through deceit. Man, if that's not a warning to us. You took away my husband. Isn't that enough for you? She has resented her sister all this time, feeling that she was treated unjustly. You took away my husband. Will you take my son's mandrakes too? I mean, I'm sorry. If you don't think that's funny, you're not paying attention. Rachel said, "Very well, he can sleep with you tonight in return for your son's mandrakes." So when Jacob came in from the fields that evening, Leah went out to meet him. "You must sleep with me," she said. "I have hired you with my son's mandrakes." I mean, how dysfunctional is this? I've hired you. You're bought and paid for. And Jacob, instead of saying, "I don't know what you're talking about, I'll decide where I sleep tonight," he goes, "Okay." Bozo! What a foolish man. Verse 17. God listened to Leah. What? Why would he do that? This is just wrong. She's trying to buy the opportunity for intimacy with the guy she deceitfully married by using a superstitious belief in mandrakes. And God said, "Okay, I got to tell you this story as quickly as I can." Young couple, new Christians, impoverished, developed, probably because of poor nutrition, dental abscesses. Okay? They got abscessed teeth. It was bad. And they were in pain. Both the husband and the wife had abscesses. And they began to pray that God would heal them. They didn't have money to go to a dentist. They were students at Montreat College back in the early 70s, late 60s maybe. And they prayed that God would heal them because that was their only hope. And it wasn't happening. They were getting worse. They were more and more miserable. And so they'd heard somewhere from some word of faith type false teacher that if you want to get God to do what you want him to do, you've got to find a verse in the Bible and claim it. And that way you basically force God's hand. It's taking the Bible like a checkbook, and you find the promises and you find the one that applies to you, and then you go and you cash it in with God. You tell God, "God, you said it. I believe it. That settles it." Which is a bumper sticker. And so they began looking for a verse. And they had a Cruden's Concordance and a King James Bible, and they found a verse where God said in the Old Testament that he would give Israel cleanness of teeth. And they said, "That's our verse." And so now, instead of just praying, "God, please heal our teeth," they began to say, "God, you promised in your word that you would give us cleanness of teeth. And so we're claiming that. We believe you. You must do it. You must heal our teeth just as you've promised in your word. You promised cleanness of teeth. Now, God, you must heal us. Honor your word. Heal us." Anybody know what cleanness of teeth is? That's an old Hebraic expression which means you won't have anything to eat. If they had read the surrounding verses, they would have seen that this was a judgment of God on his people, where he was going to send them famine. And here they are going to God with that check and saying, "I want you to pay up. You give me what you promised, cleanness of teeth, right here, right now." Don't you know that God had a laugh? But you know what he did? He healed them. He did. Not because they got the formula right. Not because they had it all figured out and they learned how to punch the buttons. But because God is a compassionate, loving God. And he looked over the balcony of heaven and he said, "I can't believe it. Oh, cleanness of teeth. If they only knew. I mean, I could wipe out their pantry for a few days and just see what they, you know." But he didn't. He healed their teeth. That's my Father. He's so wonderful. God looked down and here they are fighting over mandrakes. And God says, "Okay, let's give them another kid." I love him. He's so awesome. And all these details where people are doing the wrong thing and thinking, yes, now I've learned how to do it. Now I got what I wanted from God. God's getting what he wants ultimately. And that is the salvation of those who believe. God is working out his plan, and it is for our good. Let me tell you something, folks. If you think that you've got to find the formula, figure out which buttons to push in order to get what you want from God, you don't know God. But God knows all about you. And God is compassionate and gracious beyond what we can imagine. And I want you to understand something. Stop trying to force God to do your will and start surrendering your life to God's will. Start saying, God, I'm going to trust you. I want you to have your way. You do what you want with me. I believe your plan is best. And you'll find out that lo and behold, God has a much better plan than anything you could come up with. He knows you better than you know you. And he loves you more than you love you. So love him, because he first loved us.